Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th of September, Anno Domini 2010, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we've got news, views, stuff you can lose, things to choose.
And that too?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, you were expecting a fourth?
It was yeah!
Rule of three. We're all wearing shoes.
You're really stretching for it today.
I am. We'll start with a lovely news item. As expected, Halo Reach has the makings of another Microsoft revenue juggernaut, the sci-fi prequel about a group of super soldiers defending a besieged planet. For those of you who are our standard listeners, it's a video game. It reportedly reached into the pockets of gamers and pulled out a record $200 million in the opening 24 hours of sales. That's pretty impressive, but it gets even more impressive when we put it in perspective. Three-day opening weekend totals for movies have traditionally been big money, so let's look at the top three opening weekends of all time. In third place is The Twilight Saga, New Moon, at $142 million. Spider-Man 3 in second place with $151 million. The Dark Knight is the leader at $158 million. Now, those are totals made by movies in their first 3 days or 72 hours. Halo Reach made $200 million in just the first 24 hours. Microsoft is understandably crowing.
Halo Reach is the biggest game Microsoft has ever released, and its launch has already surpassed every game, movie, and entertainment launch this year, said Phil Spector.
No, the other one, the corporate vice president of Microsoft Game Studios. If Microsoft was hoping, however faintly, to bump Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 from its perch as the all-time opening sales record holder, it had to settle for second fiddle. Modern Warfare 2 pulled in $310 million at its launch last year off record-shattering sales of 4.7 million copies. To put that in perspective, Halo 3 took a full week to hit $300 million back in 2007, grabbing only $170 million in its first day, which actually was a record at the time. It'll be interesting to see whether Medal of Honor or Call of Duty Black Ops, both releasing later this year, have a shot at one-upping Halo Reach or coming anywhere near Modern Warfare 2's numbers. What do you think? And, of course, if you have any opinion at all, you're going to want to take a look at our poll. It's at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. The question is, did you grab a copy of Halo Reach? And the choices are, of course, not yet, and Halo what now? So far, we've got 43 votes, and as I suspected, most of you have no idea what a video game is. I think it's important to let you know that movies talk now, and they're in color.
I heard there is sound now at the movies.
There is, and it's not just the sound of popcorn.
Wow.
Being chewed. Exactly, exactly. And for those of you who actually have an opinion on this, of course, you'll want more than just the ability to push a little button. So if you look underneath the poll at the little yellow box, you'll see a link. If you click on that, it says, give us your opinion. It takes you to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Where you can, in fact, enter your opinion. So far, we have four opinions, and a couple of them actually have something to do with the question, which is so unusual for us. And our question to you, of course, what do you think of Halo Reach? Do you care? You care about video games at all? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Now, of course, we had to get Halo in our household.
Of course you did.
I have a young son.
Of course you did.
It's the only thing he's talked about for weeks. And in fact, he worked hard to earn money to get the video game. Unfortunately, nice. It was all money his mother never gave him.
Ah.
So I ended up paying for it anyway.
Sure, of course you did.
Or I would have given surely the money.
You pay one way or the other.
Yeah, it's always my payment. You know?
Yeah, right.
I pay for everything no matter what.
That's how it works. That's exactly how it works. Yep. That's exactly how it works. I'll tell you what, though. It seems to have really taken the world by storm. I mean, look at it. We think of movies as the big entertainment medium, but it's clearly not anymore. If it takes 3 days for a blockbuster like The Dark Knight to make $153 million, and Halo Reach can do it in 24 hours, and Halo 3 can make $300 million in 24 hours, then clearly the big money is in video games and not in movies. No matter what else we think of movie stars and everything else, it's the games that bring in the huge dollars.
And video games are becoming movies. They're getting movie stars to do the voices,
yep,
for them. What used to be just what we called the cut scenes, where there was a highly detailed animation, you know, between your gameplay, now is the gameplay. You know, we're seeing cut scenes. You may have seen the commercials for Halo Reach on TV, and that is the actual gameplay. Computers have progressed so far that we are now playing three-dimensional, realistic characters. And Halo has an interesting past, too. Bungie, the company that originally developed it, developed it as a Macintosh game back in the late 1990s. Microsoft bought Bungie, and Halo, the first version, Combat Evolved, it was called, became the premier game for Microsoft's new Xbox gaming platform. And it was years before they ever released a Macintosh version of it, and we were so mad because Bungie had been showing it at Macworlds for years. Here's the trailer. It's really, and at its time, you know, 10 years ago, it was an amazingly forward game for its graphics play.
Yeah, yeah. And this new one, like you said, is cinema quality.
Yeah.
You know, the game consoles in particular, like the Xbox or whatever, have progressed to the point where they have huge graphic engines in them and graphics chips.
Yep.
And even PCs nowadays, if you're going to buy a gaming PC, it's got massive processors for the graphics, a GPU graphics processing unit.
Yep.
And perhaps more than one, more than five.
Yeah, we look at some of the specs, and you might get a dual core processor in your CPU, or if you're really, really big, you'll get a quad core.
Right.
A typical NVIDIA graphics card has 80 cores in it.
Yep. Yep. And that's just for the graphics card.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're at the point now where the high end stuff that people do are all on the gaming end, which is an interesting problem that we're discovering in other places. We're talking about virtualization at work, and businesses want to virtualize. And it used to be, you know, okay. I mean, you can't really, up until very recently, you can't really virtualize graphics. They don't come across very well. And that was okay back in the day when people were just doing, you know, word processing and spreadsheets and a little bit of databases, maybe a PowerPoint presentation, but you know, that's not particularly heavy. But now people are doing video conferencing and Second Life and all kinds of stuff that's high-end graphics. They're not games, they're business-oriented functions, but they require very high-end graphics. And so we're getting machines that are high-end for people, but you can't virtualize that very well. So it's an interesting problem right now. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Mike. Mike, where are you calling from?
Calling from Perrington.
And how are things in Perrington?
Oh, sunny as always.
Really? Then you're not in Perrington, New York, are you?
No, I'm traveling through Pittsburgh, so yeah. That's always sunny.
Of course. It's always sunny in Pittsburgh. I think I've seen that. What can we do for you?
Quick question. I use my MacBook Pro with Windows through boot camp, native installation, and I've been using WinClone. And all of a sudden, WinClone has dropped off the face of the earth. Even the two canoes, everything is just dead, and almost every site you go to doesn't have it for download anymore. Have you heard anything about what happened to WinClone?
Yeah, the developer discontinued it. And it's if you look really, really hard, you can sometimes find it at other other websites.
I found it, and it works fantastic.
Yeah, it still works, and until something changes in the operating system that will break it, it will still work. WinClone, for those of you who don't know, is a Macintosh program to clone Windows drives. So it's a way to back up your Windows partition on your Mac because generally speaking, Windows programs don't run on the Mac itself, and Windows has trouble backing up itself from within inside of Windows. We're hoping it might move into a open source project, or some other developer might pick it up as well. There is also a program called Carbon Copy Cloner from Mike Bombich, and a lot of people have said that it also can back up your Windows partition. You do have to install the NTFS Toolkit Edition to let the Macintosh read and write NTFS partitions. System 10.6 also allows that now, too. You can read and write NTFS.
So it works just as seamless as WinClone?
Pretty much, yes.
So Carbon Copy Cloner.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All righty.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
I have not played with WinClone, but I wonder why I discontinued it. Well, stuff happens.
It was probably a high school kid that went to college and now he's too busy.
Yeah, it's pretty likely. we have a question from Jim Tay in the Twitter feed. He's @sound_bytes, and that's bytes with a Y.
Who wants to remind us on that? Francis.
Francis wants to remind us of that. Why does Google not allow HTTPS on iGoogle? Some of the gadgets will not work with the latest version of Firefox and Chrome. I think those are two separate questions. But I don't know why Google doesn't allow HTTPS on iGoogle. It would seem to me a kind of a breach of security to want someone to log into iGoogle and not use HTTPS to do so. I'm a little confused by that myself, I'll have to admit. Although when you log in, you generally do it on a different page, and it is HTTPS. But still, it's an interesting question, and I don't know the answer to that. But I have high friends in low places at Google, and I'll ask them. I don't know that I'll get an answer, but I'll certainly ask them. But it's an interesting. I like iGoogle. I use iGoogle pretty regularly. You can set all kinds of interesting things. I've got a countdown for how much longer I've gotten my master's degree. I've got time.
What's the time frame?
149 days.
Ooh.
I've got a lot of work ahead of me.
Have you started your thesis yet?
Yes, yes.
Are you one of those students?
No, I've started it. I've got a bunch of news feeds, a bunch of feeds to some blogs that I follow, and it's all on one page, and iGoogle gives you all of that. So it's actually pretty nice. If you haven't played with it, it's google.com, and you can see a link to iGoogle if you prefer to try that. It's pretty, and you can set the backgrounds and you set themes, different colors and stuff. It's actually it's a pretty cool deal all the way around. Google seems to be doing pretty tremendously well in a lot of what they do these days. They're not perfect in anything, but they're very good in a whole lot of things. I have to tell you, I'm very impressed by a lot of the stuff Google does. I'm looking at Google pretty much, you know, taking over the world. And I, for one, welcome our googly overlords.
Well, they've been adding so many cool things, you know, and doing so much stuff that's innovative that folks want, and they're listening to folks and what they want.
Well, they've done a couple of things right. I was actually talking to a fairly high-placed Microsoft executive the other day, and we were talking about the difference between live.com, which is you can log on to it's a Microsoft site, live.com, and you can then run web-based versions of Word and PowerPoint and Excel. Which is very like Google Docs, where you have a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation package. They both work pretty well. They both have web limitations. But one of the interesting things is that Microsoft kind of insists on making the experience look exactly like Word on the desktop. And that makes it very slow to load on anything but a super fast network connection. So for people in a business where you might have gigabit or 100 megabit connectivity, That's not a big deal. But at home, where you have a much slower speed and the average in America. You all right there, son?
Toe cramp.
Toe cramp.
Or as my wife used to say, chuck pony.
Chuck pony, right. It's slow, and I don't know that I would want to wait. So I tend to use Google Docs when I'm, you know, for example, out somewhere doing whatever I'm doing. I use Google Docs because it is faster. I'm not going to go into the better or the worse or the whatever. I don't really care. I use Google Docs because it's faster. Oh, and it integrates directly with my phone, which it's important to me.
Droid.
I love my Droid, but what I really love is the fact that it interconnects with so many things. My Google Calendar, my word processors, my spreadsheets.
Now, they're going to upgrade you to the next version of Droid so you can...
I don't know who this they is that's magically going to pluck me out of America and hand me a new phone, but if anybody from Verizon is listening and would like me to have a new phone, please feel free. You know my email address, nick@asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Very well done. Very well done.
After a year, I hope so.
It becomes a reflex after a while.
Yeah, no lie. But no, you know, maybe at the next Soho show, you can perform your magic again on that lady.
That's exactly right. I love my Droid. I can't deny it. What's interesting is all the people who come up to me and say, I heard you talking about your Droid. I have one too. I love it. And they're talking about, you know, how, well, I've got the Incredible and it's faster than yours. Yeah, I get that. But I've had mine longer than you've had yours, and I had all that time with it. So that's all fine with me. And I do, you know, that's the syndrome we all talk about. Oh, I think I'll wait for the next version. I've had mine forever, and I love it. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Hey, those few of you still using Adobe Acrobat, should pay attention to this next story. After warning users earlier this week of a potential security risk in their popular Acrobat PDF software, Adobe is now cautioning users against installing a third-party patch that claims to address the issue. The vulnerability detailed on Adobe's site affects all versions. Pay attention, people. All versions of Adobe Acrobat and Reader for every OS, including Mac OS X, Windows, Linux, and Android. The third-party patch released yesterday by security firm Ramzafzar, R-A-M-Z-A-F-Z-A-R, I don't really care how they pronounce it, who cares, was purportedly developed in 2 hours and has been released well ahead of the projected October 4th release date for the official Adobe patch. The vulnerability itself is rooted in the use of an unsafe method for memory manipulation with claims to have fixed by replacing the insecure calls with codes that prevents an attacker from gaining control of a target computer with the exploit. While Adobe is correct to warn users that installing an unofficially patched DLL containing program code is a risk in itself, the fact remains that the original bug is both embarrassing and costly considering it is a well-known attack vector in most software and could have easily been prevented. For those of you who actually care, the core at the issue is the strcat call, which copies data from one memory location to the other, but doesn't validate the amount of information to transfer. Whereas the strncat call was specifically designed to prevent that sort of vulnerability, and they just didn't bother to use it. If you're using Adobe Reader, there's not much you can do to avoid the bug until Adobe gets around to releasing their update. You can, however, install an alternate PDF reader, such as Foxit Reader for Windows, which will help you avoid attacks on the Adobe Reader. Mac users can use Preview, the image viewer that's bundled with Mac OS X. Linux users, almost all, already have Evince, E-V-I-N-C-E, and we'll let you know about the official Adobe update as soon as it's released. So our question to you is, do you actually still use Adobe Reader? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You know, since I've started using Evince, I haven't missed the Adobe Reader at all. I try to put Foxit on everybody's Windows machine so that they don't get caught by these kind of bugs. It's really an embarrassing and stupid bug to have gotten caught by. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's actually a call that's almost identical to the call that's bad that fixes the problem. Why didn't they use it? Who knows? Who knows?
Didn't think of it in time.
Yeah. Well, it's just, it's lazy programming. There's, you know, you have to do a tiny little bit more work.
And
to use the new, because it has a slightly different series of parameters.
And there's so much pressure on programmers to meet marketing deadlines and production deadlines. You know, we can't ship it when it's done. We have to ship it because marketing told us to.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right, our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Where, what's up, Walter?
Well, hello, gentlemen. I'm calling back because 2 weeks ago I had that issue about my Ubuntu desktop freezing up. And you were correct. I had a capacitor that had swollen and had leaked.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that baby's goodbye.
Yep.
Wait, you need to repeat that one little part again.
That baby is goodbye.
No, way before that. Oh, you were right.
You were right. Yep.
That's what we're going to hear. One more time.
Very good. But I hope you can help me on this issue now.
So if you're really, really steady with a solder... Yeah. If you're really, really steady with a soldering iron, I've heard of people that have been able to unsolder those capacitors and solder in a replacement capacitor.
I've heard that, too, but I've even talked to a tech or two, and they said, well, it's 50-50, and, well, yeah. If I blow it, well, the computer shot anyway, so.
Well, there's that.
But we were.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the one, we've got an electrician that had that happen to his Macintosh, one of our customers, and you know he deals with soldering irons all day long, and so he replaces all the capacitors. You know, he said it's a $300 job to replace all the capacitors on the motherboard.
Right. If you were paying him to replace them.
Yeah. Which you know it's cheaper than $500 for a new logic board. But,
well, right, but still.
Yeah, my brother's like that. He could back in the day when you know we had this little Sims. And the folks would pop them in, and they'd snap off the side bed.
Yep.
And all those little connectors, I mean, they are small. He could sit there, because he'd come over and help me out, and unsolder one, and that was like 72 pins.
Yep.
Times two.
Yep.
Unsolder, put a new one in, and replace it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Clean as a baby's butt.
Yep, absolutely. What's your question, Walter?
Well, I have a... I hope you can make a suggestion about a certain another Linux OS to use. Here's my problem. I have an older laptop, which I used to take to Buffalo because my father doesn't have wireless, and so therefore I use an external modem. Okay, and yeah. I disconnected the modem that's built into the laptop. And I also use a parallel port portable printer so I can take and do things over at his place for him.
Neither of which exist much anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's my problem in that I had been running Zubuntu 8.04, I believe it was, and everything was doing just fine. Now, they've upgraded because they're like Ubuntu. Now it's at 10.04. And I think I can go ahead and download WVDIAL and take care of the modem issue. That's right. Not a problem. But it's the parallel port that's a problem because from what I've been reading, Ubuntu doesn't support parallel ports. I then have turned to Vector Linux, and that appears to support the parallel port, believe it or not, with cups.
Huh.
But the problem I now have is they use Chestnut for a dial-up, and for some reason, even though I have no power going to the built-in modem, it still sees a modem, that WIN modem, and I can't get it to configure to see the external modem. So I'm hoping that you might know of some Linux OS that could be a little more friendly. I guess I'm spoiled by Ubuntu, but I don't know where else to turn because I'm really having trouble with Chestnut dial-up, and I can't get WVDIAL on those Slackware and Unity operating systems.
You might say it's a tough nut to crack.
Stop. Yeah, what I don't understand.
He brought it up.
Yeah, what I don't understand is why you're not seeing the parallel port.
Well, from what I've read on the websites, their response is that, well, only 1% of all our users, if that many, use the parallel port. Everything's gone USB, so they've not bothered to correct the kernel.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah,
get
there's
it.
A bug in the kernel. That's absolutely true.
And you can get a portable USB printer, but it's nice to use the printer you've already got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I could also likely spend about about $20, and maybe I'd be successful with an adapted one, you know, USB parallel port cable to attach to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have much luck with those.
Well, I have to admit, I haven't actually had a parallel port printer. I mean, I've got a couple around at work, but they're all also USB, so we all plug in USB.
Yeah.
Or they're net connected, and we just do it that way.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You've stumped me. I have no answer for you at this moment.
Unless he gets a print server box.
Well, I was just thinking that if you got a print server box and put it on the network itself.
Yeah, because they quite often they have parallel ports and USB ports on.
Right. And what you can do is there are printer servers that you can put directly on your network.
Okay. But again, this is why I'm taking it to my father, so it's like I'm not setting up any network except the laptop, the printer, and the external modem. That's it.
Right, because it's a modem.
Yep.
You might want to just consider, you know, for the pain that it's going to be, just pick up a cheap HP DeskJet printer or something, or a Canon. You know, I mean, they've got so many.
Yeah,
they've got
so many. USB printer for $29.
Yeah, they're you know, for the volume that he's probably going to do,
and
the time and effort that you're going to work on this, you probably go over and pick one up dirt cheap because they always have them on sale right now.
You may also want to check out Lugor, the Linux user group of Rochester.
Yeah.
Their website, lugor.org, they have fact lists and they have discussion groups. And you might be able to ask someone there and they might have a better answer.
Which version of Ubuntu are you running?
Well, on that laptop, I was running Zumbuntu 8.04, which was the old long-term service.
Right.
Paralleling what Ubuntu used, other than because it was using XFACE as the desktop rather than GNOME.
Right. Apparently, according to the Ubuntu wiki, the Ubuntu launchpad where the bugs are, bugs.launchpad.net, it appears that they will not be fixing this in any release before Maverick, which is 10.10.
Oh, so next month, maybe I've got a shot.
Well, maybe. I'm certainly not going to promise, but you're right. There is a bug. Can't set up a parallel port printer. It's an acknowledged bug. It's a real bug. And they're not fixing it in Lucid, but they have released a fix, apparently, for Maverick.
Okay.
Unless I'm reading this wrong. Hold on. No, that's what it looks like. Excuse me. That's what it looks like. It says released. Yeah, I'm not a member of Launchpad. I'm not logging in. But it says released. Well, it's released. It's released to manufacturing. I mean, obviously, it's not out yet. So, yeah, that's all I can see. That's the best I can tell you is as these guys said, absolutely the a $30 printer.
Yeah, I mean, because
depends on how much printing you really do anymore.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. How much printing is he actually going to do? You're taking it over to your father, right?
Yeah, because we go over and have to print out some of his medical stuff, and we have to go and take care of some other miscellaneous. Right.
Yeah, so for the volume,
it's not a lot.
Yeah, for the volume that he's going to do, pick him up a cheap one.
Okay. Well, it was for me because I bring it along with me from Rochester to Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
So
buy the $30 printer and leave it there.
Okay.
You know, just stick it on a shelf, and then
that way
you really need to plug in your printer, go for it. You're done. It's over.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm sorry, but I wish I had a better answer, but it appears there isn't one.
Okay, very good. Well, at least you're more up to date from what I saw, because again, last I saw is that Ubuntu folks were saying, "Forget it, we're not going to do anything about it because there's just too little demand." But I'm glad to hear that they are making a fix on the bug. That's
well,
great.
Yeah, it says on the official Ubuntu site, they won't fix it in Lucid, which is odd because it's long term support. But
right.
They did fix it already in Maverick, which is the next release.
Okay, I can wait another 30 days and see about that then, and try it on there, because then Zumbuntu should be the same thing other than having the X face.
Right, and yes, right. Zubuntu or Xubuntu, whatever you call it.
Right.
And you're absolutely right, except it may take a little more than 30 days to come out, maybe another week.
Okay.
It's not just Maverick. It's Maverick Meerkat.
Yes, Maverick Meerkat. Yeah, you're right. It's Lucid Lynx and Maverick yeah. Meerkat. Exactly.
So what's we got to figure out what N is going to be. Do they have a list of their upcoming release names?
No, that's usually a big deal what the next release name is going to be. All right, thanks.
I'd hate to see an un-Maverick Meerkat.
Those are the ones that walk in line. We call them lemmings. Yeah. They follow each other. The guy in the front is a Maverick. The guys in the back are lemmings. But yeah, it is interesting to me that the parallel port is broke. I didn't even know it. I can't tell you the last time I plugged a printer into a computer parallel. I really can't tell you that.
We ran into a big problem in the Mac side because Apple used the DB25 pin for the connector for the SCSI port, which is the same 25-pin connector that PCs use for the parallel port. On the printer end, it used the Centronics 36, but we would run into so many Mac users that would plug their old parallel printers into the SCSI port. If you were lucky, it just blew up the printer. A lot of times it would blow up the Mac, too.
Ooh. Nice. Chris Reich, friend of the show, Chris Reich, over in the IRC chat says the next one's going to be called Naughty Narwhal. I believe he's incorrect. But if I had to vote, I would vote. Stop.
He's in pain.
It only hurts when he laughs. Exactly.
And Steve is like,
yeah.
I'd vote for that one. If that were one of the choices, I'd be voting for that one. Absolutely.
Put it up there as a suggestion.
Sure. Chris should. He should. But yeah, that's our. Do we have another caller on the line? Is that what I remember? Mm-hmm. No? Okay. All right.
No, they hung up.
We don't need another caller. We'll.
We go animals that start with N.
Animals that start with N.
Newt.
Right.
I like naughty. So it's the naughty newt. Yep.
Or the naughty narwhal. I don't
narwhal.
Have a problem with
I
naughty
like narwhal.
Narwhal,
yeah. How about the natterjack toad?
No, because toad starts with a T. I don't know if you noticed that.
But it's natterjack. It's a specific kind of toad.
Sure. I get that. All right. So, listen, if you've got a suggestion for the next name for Ubuntu, give us a call. It's got to start with an N. It's NN, like it's Lucid Lynx, Maverick Meerkat. It's got to be NN. Give us a call. The number is 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We've already got Naughty Narwhal as our first guest, so call in and we'll have a few more. Maybe we'll put it up as an extra poll.
Yeah, put it up. That'd be cool.
In the forums, we'll put it up as a forum. If we get enough people calling in suggestions, we'll put it up as a poll. But until then, well, we won't. That's
they've already
simple.
Picked it. 11 is Natty Narwhal.
Oh, very close.
Nice.
Oh,
nice.
Well, that's okay. We can still have our suggestions. Maybe we could go for the O's.
Yeah.
O will actually be a little tougher, so.
Gutsy Gibbon, we missed that one.
Yeah. No, I ran Gutsy Gibbon. Gibbon was good. Gibbon was a pretty
Intrepid
good release.
Ibex?
Yes, I ran Ibex, absolutely. we're going to take a quick break while you think of Ubuntu names that start with an O. We've moved on to O now. Back in just a couple minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. We have our first entry into the O category. It's a strep. Hello, how are you? Obstreperous oryx from Chris Reich. So give us a call and let us know what O words you think we should have for our next Ubuntu release. I say our next Ubuntu release. I really have exactly nothing to do with it. Exactly nothing. Our next caller is George from Greece. There's two G letters, but we're on to O now, George.
Sorry, I can't take part in the Ubuntu question.
Why not?
But I wanted to go back earlier and ask you and the others were talking about virtualizing something, and I wasn't quite sure what that term means. Could you explain a little further?
I'd be happy to.
I think you said that graphics don't virtualize, but word processors do.
No, high-end graphics. Here's the deal. A virtualized operating system is one that actually kind of runs inside another operating system. So, for example, it used to be that you virtualized one operating system inside another. So if I'm running Linux, I can virtually run Windows or another version of Linux, or depending on the processor and the system, Mac OS X, whatever, inside that. So it sort of appears as a window. You open it up as a window, but it's the full operating system inside that window. Does that make a certain amount of sense?
Well, it does. And does it pertain then just to operating systems?
Hold on. That was the first iteration.
Mm-hmm.
Now what they've got are operating systems that are nothing but virtualizers. They're called hypervisors. And what happens is you run them on the base level of a system, whether it's a desktop machine or a server, and then inside that you run multiple virtual machines. So, for example, I put a hypervisor system in my data center, and I can run Windows on it. I can run Linux on it. I can run 50 instances of each, and people can connect to them using thin clients, what used to be called dumb terminals back when they were text only. So the operating system actually runs inside a fake environment on the server, and you connect to it and run it as if you were connected at your desk. But instead of having to have all that power at your desk, I put all that power in the data center.
Okay.
And that's what virtualization means. You don't have to run the thing anywhere where you are. What's nice about that is it facilitates something that industry calls hot cubicles. And what that means, and this is going to disappoint Steve because it sounds like such a good term, it means that when you walk into to work, you can sit down at any desk in any cubicle, and when you sign in, you get your desktop no matter where you are.
We used to call those roaming profiles.
Mm-hmm. And it's like a roaming profile, only there's no profile. It's all in a virtual server on the
laptop. Novell used to do that, too.
Yeah, Novell used to do it. Lots of places used to do it. It's become huge now because we're going back to the days of putting everything in the data center. And not having it on the desktop because it's just much easier to manage. But now that virtualization works for everything but high-end graphics, because you can imagine how difficult it is to push high-end graphics down through any sort of network connection. And the latest versions of virtualizing are beginning to allow that to happen. So my hope is within the next year, at the latest, we'd be able to virtualize everything.
It's been hard enough over the years for one processor to run one operating system.
Right.
And now making one processor run multiple virtual operating systems, we're getting into processors fast enough to do that.
Well, for example, in our I'm the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And we have labs. Right. And we teach MIS students, and we might want them to set up a server and four or five workstations and a network and do some testing and all that stuff. Right. Where am I going to find enough machines to do that? But if I can give them a big server in the back room and let them virtualize their network environment right up on the server, then it becomes less expensive for our school to support those classes. In addition, if I could virtualize all my labs, students could sit down at any machine and get all of their data in an easier way than roaming profiles, and a safer way, because having a profile on a machine leaves it open to hacking. You know, I could hack a profile on a machine if I know what I'm doing. So having the profile never come down to the machine, because it's all happening up on the server, is another level of security. In addition, there are programs that let you access those virtual machines from any computer anywhere. So students could do their work from home or from their laptop, you know, anywhere. So the benefits of virtualization are huge. The reality is just a little behind when you're talking about high-end graphical stuff.
Okay.
Did that help at all?
It helps me quite a bit. It sounds like it largely pertains to commercial operations or laboratories such as you have at the college.
Right. For an individual, if you bought a beefy enough machine, you know, a big quad-core processor with 8 gig of RAM or something, you could then run one instance of Linux, one instance of Windows, you know, maybe a couple instances of each for stuff that you want to do. For example, I keep on my Linux box at work, I run XP and Vista and Windows 7, not constantly, but I have them available to me so that if somebody asks me to test something or do something, I can test it in all three operating systems and figure out what works and what doesn't. But for the average user, not really anything you're going to need right now.
It is getting to be fairly common in the Mac world, where people with Macintoshes occasionally need to run a Windows program. So instead of buying a second computer, we run a virtual Windows.
Right.
With a couple of different virtualization programs. So we can run Windows in our Mac, or you can run Macintosh in Windows if you violate licenses, but
right.
It can be done. So it lets you run other operating systems inside your operating system of choice, so you can run virtually any program you want written for any operating system.
So, Steve, I can understand the benefit from the standpoint of the hardware, and I presume then that the operator has to have paid for whatever licenses.
Yes.
Are involved.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Sure. Licensing is a tough issue when it comes to virtualization.
Okay.
Because Microsoft tends to license to a machine. Uh-huh. And now where they finally solved the problem, but for the longest time, there was a real gray area about if I licensed to machine A, but I was actually kind of running it on machine B. I mean, I'm virtual on machine A, right? And so I'm accessing it from machine B. So is it really running on machine B? Or is it running on machine A and I'm just... It was a very gray area for Microsoft for a long time.
And they're accommodating that now?
Yeah, they're much better at it now.
Thanks very much, fellas.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, virtualization is a really cool technology for businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Not yet so much for the home, although I know people who are doing it. I know people who do it every day.
Well, plus, like you were saying, going back to doing rollouts, you know, if I got to do some updates, to go around and put it on each machine... You know, some of these updates and everything else, it's easier to roll it out.
Right. From my point of view, once we virtualize everything, there's one image of Windows up on my server, mm-hmm. and everybody accesses it.
And
then they have their own private area, right?
Yeah.
And so all I have to do is update that one image. Instead mm-hmm. of 300 machines, I update one machine. I'm done. Actually, I make Dave do it. But still, my point is that I only have to update one machine. It will make life so much easier all the way around. But the needs of the desktop user have outstripped the ability of virtualization at this point. I can't run Second Life. I can't run Skype. And I don't know any of my faculty who don't run one or both of those products.
Well, we should talk about, matter of fact, for the folks that don't know, we do on Friday nights Q&A like we do here in Second Life. And they've come out with a new viewer. A lot of folks have been asking me, you know, that the Emerald viewer, which was out for the longest time.
Was very nice.
Was very good and wound up evidently caused some security leaks. And there were security issues around it. So Linden Lab said, nope, and they took it off from their recommendation list. Well, word has it that 5 of the programs at least started out moving over to a new viewer. That if you folks are trying to get into Second Life and don't like the new viewer that Second Life puts out, which is a piece of junk. They now have a viewer that you can call, which is called Phoenix. And if you do a Google search for Phoenix Phoenix Viewer, it'll take you to that webpage. Or off the Second Life webpage, they have third-party viewers that you can also select, download it, and install it from the Phoenix. And they have it for Linux, and they've got it for the Mac, and they've got it for the PC, and they are doing great strides. It looks a lot like Emerald. It's a lot cleaner and easier to use, and they're working very hard to get the bugs out of it. I got to give them credit. These guys are really doing due diligence. But, yeah, again, if you've never experienced it, you might want to check out Second Life. It's kind of different.
It's fun, actually. You meet some great people. You have some good times.
I mean,
it's a nice way to interact with people who aren't local.
Yeah.
You know, if you have friends who are out of state or you know, whatever, or out of the country, you can all meet in Second Life and chat with each other and all of that stuff.
That's a lot like the olden days of BBSs or you know, IRC. You know, IRC is probably the very first chatting software.
But, I mean, you're actually talking live, though. I mean, we go in there and you can get on voice. And, I mean, I've got one friend. She's in Denmark. Kenzie, she's in Portland, Oregon. Dory is in Omaha, Nebraska. Tay is down in South Carolina with Wyoming.
Yeah, and the bad part about Second Life, you do have to talk to Tay once in a while.
Yeah. Well,
but you know, you take the bad with the good.
But Dory, you know, Dory had to put up with him, so.
She's got it tougher than we have.
This way we're helping her out. But I mean, then you got folks over in England. I mean, I've got a friend who is in Australia.
Yep.
And you can sit there, and it's like they're sitting right there in the living room. It's local. It's free. So you can sit there and talk to as long as you want, and it's just amazing.
And it's all done in a virtual world.
Yeah.
You know, we're back to virtualization. It's a three-dimensional virtual world where you have an avatar, you know, an iconic character that represents
you. And no, they're
not
all tall, thin, and blue.
No. Although there was one in the audience last night.
Yeah, there was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you can make
Von Viva, I think, has one.
You can make your avatar look like you if you want, or you can look like anything or anyone you want to create, and it's all done in three-dimensional, you know, virtual landscapes.
Yeah, matter of fact, I got to teach a class in there tonight.
Yeah, you can buy land if you want to and set up a house there. You can create your own.
You can make
stuff.
You can make money, literally make some good money.
Yep.
Yeah, there's a whole virtual economy where you can make clothes, you make things, you make houses, you make furniture, and if you're artistic enough and
jewelry,
you can build this sort of stuff in the virtual world and have a storefront that people can buy virtual stuff with real money.
And they do,
yeah.
And then you can gain virtual money and spend it on virtual things or cash it out for real cash.
Yep, we talk about that in Facebook with the Farmville. Application,
right.
Where you buy virtual farming products with real money, and how many millions of dollars that company's making.
Yeah, Zynga. All right, our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit. What can we do for you, Rich?
Hi, guys. I'm the guy that called last week about the video problem, only playing for like 3 seconds or so, and I'm the firefighter guy.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember. I really haven't fixed the problem. I've done all the downloads and everything. I'm trying to download the Acrobat Flash Reader.
Yeah.
And that keeps telling me that it says the download did not pass the integrated check.
Well, that's all right. If you heard our first or second story this week, you don't want to download Acrobat anyway. You want Foxit Reader, Foxit.
Well, are you looking for Acrobat or Flash? Those are two completely separate products.
Right.
Well, it's the Acrobat Flash Player is what...
Oh, that's that's different.
No, there isn't. There's the Adobe Acrobat Reader, and there's the Adobe Flash Player. They are two completely
separate
products.
Right.
Correct. Yeah, I understand.
You want the Adobe Flash
Player.
Okay, you want the
Adobe Flash Player.
That's different.
Which has also been updated recently.
Right, it's like 10 point something.
Yeah.
So you go to Adobe with your browser, and you click on download, and what's the error message?
The whole thing comes up, starts to download, gets about to 99%, and then says the download did not pass the integrated check, and there's a bunch of numbers after it.
Sounds like a bad download.
Sounds like a bad download, but I don't know where that message is coming from.
Is it picking the right operating
system? What browser are you using?
Well, I've done it in Firefox and I've done it in Explorer, both.
Mm.
I don't know where else to go get it. I mean, it brings up the download manager and things like that, and you know, starts the download and does like it's supposed to.
The Adobe download
and then,
manager.
Like I said, 99% through it, all of a sudden this thing pops up, says that it didn't pass the integrated check.
Yeah, Steve just downloaded it. It downloaded fine.
Well, it downloads the stub that launches the download manager
that downloads
the rest of it, which is annoying.
Right, exactly.
There should be a direct download somewhere, if I can find it, rather than downloading the stub.
That's what I was thinking. I tried CNET.
Well, everybody's going
to take it to here, too. So.
Yeah, everybody's going to point you back to Adobe. They're somewhere on that download page. I can't see it now because I'm on a Mac, and it just keeps picking Mac. There may be a button for the standalone installer rather than the download manager installer. And you may be able to find that. Let me see if I can find... what version of Windows are you running?
7.
Okay. So if we just Google Flash standalone installer, maybe we'll find it. And we'll try to put a link up for you.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll try to do that.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you very much. We are going to take a break. That music means that you've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to the show, but... No worries. We've got a whole nother hour for you to waste, but we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have a whole lot more of Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. As you may have noticed for the last hour, you have been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, hurtling headlong into our 22nd year of Life on the Air. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites right here on the truly great, and pay attention to this next part, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go away, or if you do, come right back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And just before we get back to the show, I want to remind you folks that, you know, it's that time of year and it's coming up very soon. And hear us now, remember us later. Because starting October 11th is going to become the pledge drive again. And it's that time that we have to come to you folks and ask you for money. Remember, we are a member-supported radio program. So we count on you folks each year, twice a year we come to you and ask you to help us. Now, I really want to get the word out ahead of time. That's why I'm starting it now. And I'm going to keep plugging it until the 11th and on through the pledge. The polka guys have been beating our butts. And, you know, it's kind of shameful. Because, you know, we've been calling on 22 years. We've got a great audience out there, you folks. As you heard that one gentleman call and said, we were right. Because, yeah, we've been doing this for over 22 years. And if you take the experience there, you know, you can gain a lot of knowledge. So start tucking that money away so that when we come hounding you, and that's just what we're going to do, we're going to come after you, on starting October 11th, please, you know, don't turn us away and shell up when you call in and just, you know, become members.
You know what, though? Seriously, if all of our listeners each put away $1 a day, yep, $1 a day, that's nothing these days. By the time we get on the air for the pledge, yep, they'll have $28 in their pockets. Add another $2, you can pledge at the $30 level. I don't know how you go wrong with that.
No, you can't. And so, you know, folks, like I say, think of it now.
It's $1 a day for Pete's sake. Are we worth $1 a day to you people? Start putting your money
but
away
here's
now.
The other thing, though. If we hound them now, and they set that money aside.
That's my point.
That pledge drive is going to end faster.
And the faster it ends, the faster we stop
we
begging.
We get back into it. Absolutely. And start taking the questions, because some folks also said, when are you going to start it? Well, as soon as we raise the money. Again, we're member-supported. So when we come at you, bam, get in there and show your support for Soundbites. That's the key thing that I want to drive home to folks, is they got to, you know, tell their friends in that, that, you know, this great program.
Rob Linton and the great folks at Jazz 90.1 generously gave us a beautiful home, and this is our chance to say thanks.
I mean, we're going on our working on our second year here.
Right.
And, you know, it's all due to you folks and when it comes to that time. So, like Nick said, start tucking it away now. Then that way, oh, no problem. Yeah, I'm a member, and they'll start, you know, calling in the pledges.
That's right, because I will be asking. If you call in for a question, I will be asking if you're a member.
Yep. So
I do that during every pledge drive because I don't care.
We have no shame.
Shame. I can't even find it in the dictionary. Good. All right. Are we back to the show?
Yeah, let's get back to the
show. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, it's already October 11th, apparently.
Well, you know, we're just kind of gearing them up because, again, you know, if they, like you said, and be wise, just start tucking that buck away now. Hell, it's only, what, the 18th right now?
18th, 28 days till we start the drive.
You know, and they start tucking that
buck. So we're on the air again. And yes. And it's 28. Now, there are levels, $35 level, mm-hmm. $50 level.
We'll take
28 bucks. We'll take 10 bucks.
Yeah.
Put a buck a day away, 28 bucks. You become a member. You feel better. We feel better. Everybody wins. We get off the drive faster.
And the key thing, though, is I want to beat the polka dots.
We need to beat the polka guys. This is really kind of embarrassing.
It is.
They're polka people, for God's sake. And we can't beat them? Come on, seriously. They're polka people. Cheese and crackers.
You folks, definitely don't let us face that shameless embarrassment of being beaten.
We can't come in.
By
we
those
can't.
Two guys.
Al and Ray, we come in here, and we have to hang our heads.
Yeah.
They gloat. They laugh. They have small whips. And I'm tired of it. You people need to help us out. All right, enough
about
that.
My back is just healing from the last time.
Exactly right. No, that's your tattoo.
Oh, that too. All right. Forgot about that.
All right, here's a good one. Pressured by law enforcement advocacy groups in Congress, the popular site Craigslist said it would permanently remove adult services from its online classified ads in the United States. Sorry, Steve.
Well, they'll just have to advertise somewhere else.
Exactly. The move has been lauded by foes of Craigslist's adult services ads, but it also sparked concern among free speech advocates who see the shuttering of its adult services as a threat to free speech on the Internet. Craigslist lawyers told a House Judiciary Subcommittee on Craigslist lawyers told the House Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on child sex trafficking Wednesday, I'm a professional, don't try this at home, that it has no plans to reopen its U.S. adult services section, which it shut down September 3rd after heavy criticism from human rights advocacy groups in Congress who charged that Craigslist was commonly used in the global sex trade of women. This is a pretty serious thing. Craigslist responded with a request for evidence of the alleged trafficking. Earlier this month, Craigslist complied with lawmaker request and put a black bar with the word censored over the section of the site labeled adult services. The move raised the question of free speech and the Internet and whether or not Congress has the right to censor the Internet. According to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, the Craigslist decision to censor its adult services section is an unfortunate one. The EFF points out that the attorneys general basically bullied Craigslist into making such a decision, as over the past 2 years, Craigslist repeatedly offered to go far above and beyond their legal obligations to work with law enforcement officials, and the attorneys general have inevitably rewarded completely voluntary, non-mandatory offers of cooperation from Craigslist with further demands and insults. Of course, shutting down Craigslist adult services section for good is unlikely to fix all the sex trafficking issues just like that. Now, as Elizabeth McDougall, a partner at Perkins Cole LLP, the law firm representing Craigslist, said, the ads will just migrate to less socially responsible sites that won't cooperate with law enforcement.
You can open up any newspaper and see sex ads.
Exactly. So is the censorship of Craigslist a great thing for America or a terrible thing for free speech? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
In fact, Dave is doing one right now.
That's right. Putting in an ad at Craigslist?
No.
What are you doing with your phone in the middle of... Pay attention to
this
the radio
show. This is not my phone.
Show.
This is my his computer, iPod. So I can keep
pay
searching.
He's chatting.
He's chatting with someone. Cheese and crackers.
What was that school this week? Some big school. Was it Harvard? Some big school.
I need more than that.
I know. I got to find the... All right. Some really big school shut down Facebook and Twitter for a week as a social experiment.
Oh, yeah. Somebody did. They shut it down just as a social experiment for a week. I couldn't live without Facebook anymore. Because it's the only way my daughter talks to
see,
me.
You guys, you two
she's
have
in college,
your,
and I don't see her except on Facebook.
You two have your notebooks there. I use this to do the searching and that and other stuff. I qualified it.
Yes, you did.
The Harrisburg University of Science and Technology. It was an H school.
Sorry,
they shut down Facebook.
Harvard, Harrisburg. Yeah. What's the difference?
Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and AOL Instant Messaging.
This mouse here, it's broke. Doesn't have two buttons.
Yeah, no kidding.
Use the control key for the second button.
Apparently, Steve Jobs thinks Apple people can't figure out buttons. Too many buttons.
I see Windows people all the time not knowing which button to push, and they push them both.
But they learn.
As simple as it is, I'll stick to my iTouch.
Yep.
I can do the few things, quick look stuff up, and that type of stuff. So.
Nothing wrong with it. Nope. Absolutely nothing wrong with it.
I mean, I've gotten to where, you know, like I said, I didn't want to pay for going back. I did come from the dark side and got a better phone that I can do my texting and everything else, and I had to put an extra 10 bucks, but I refused to surf the internet on it.
Right.
I'd rather do it on my iTouch where I can sit at a Wi-Fi hotspot, like in here or any place that you go nowadays.
Right.
This is always with me. I use the iTouch for my calendaring. My contacts are in there. And like I say, anywhere as I am, I can always usually get free Wi-Fi and do any surfing I want.
And there was some big news in that front, too. A lot of people are going back to Twitter for a second. The Miami Hurricanes players have been ordered to stop.
It's another H place.
Yeah, shut down their Twitter accounts. Don't want to be tweeting during the game. But a lot of people are familiar with
They're Twittering things like quarterback is an idiot to call X type of play.
Yeah.
And then it's like, wait, the other team now knows. Because they're following your feed,
feed, yeah. A lot of people are familiar with the
They didn't say they were the brightest crayon in the box.
The MiFi devices. It's a cellular to Wi-Fi little bridge, a little credit card-like device, brings in cellular traffic and then broadcasts a wireless signal, which lets you connect your cell phone, iPod, computer, you know, Wi-Fi on the go. And typically they've been a little expensive. They're around $200 for the box and $60 to $80 a month for the service with a 2-year contract. News came out, I think it was last week, that Virgin Mobile, is selling a MiFi now. It's $150 for the box itself and $40 a month, no contract. So now it's the least expensive and no contract, to get cellular Wi-Fi. So if you are
out, and who's that from?
From Virgin Mobile, and it uses the Sprint network, so it's pretty widespread network coverage. So if you know you are going to be outside of a Wi-Fi hotspot, or you're traveling or on the road, you know the kids in the back seat of the car, you can get cellular Wi-Fi to your computer and iPod and devices that don't have cellular built into them.
That's really very nice. Mm-hmm. One of the rumors, and I'm pretty much hoping it's true, is that with the new tablets, the Android tablets that are coming out, Verizon's going to offer a no contract, whatever, 30, 40, whatever they're going to charge a month, cellular thing for that. And I'm really hoping that's true because I may not need, as Steve said, you know, I may be perfectly happy to do with you what you do, Dave, and use the Wi-Fi everywhere. But there, you know, if I'm going to go visit my daughter and be on the road for a day, I may want to pay the $40 and have cellular on the trip up and back.
Yeah. It's, you know, I mean, it's hard. You know, I had a hard time. You're a totally different case with your DroidNet and what you use it for. And I can understand that. You use it literally for work.
I do.
And whereas me, the phone is just, you know, simple. The texting, because I've got grandchildren, and other folks do a lot of texting, and it's handy. And and I still have it for the phone, which I need it. I don't want to be surfing the web on that little screen. I'm sorry. I'm on a computer all day long and at night quite often.
Yep.
Sitting there surfing and researching and everything else. My emails, fine. I don't need them on my phone.
Right.
You know, when I get away from the office, I don't need to be tethered to that too. So that's why I, you know, leave that strictly at the shop.
Yep.
And, you know, at home. And my phone is just for that. But for the few incidences that I do want to maybe surf with that, the iTouch has been the greatest tool that I got from Steve. And, you know, syncing up my appointments and everything else. And I even got to around to this past week downloading some music onto it.
Wow. using an iPod to listen to music?
iTouch,
yeah. You're a radical guy.
It also does music.
Wow.
I was using it before that because, one of the apps that I have on my iTouch is, XM Radio.
Yep.
So, you know, I haven't had the urge to download any music because I literally just put the app on there, plug in the headphones, and whether I'm downstairs in the basement or up, you know, outside and working in the yard, I listen to my XM radio.
Right. And I do. I don't have XM, but I have I listen to Pandora and a couple of others. And what I do like about being able to listen on my Droid is it listens through the 3G. So yeah. I can very easily, you know, strap it on and go do stuff out in the yard or whatever. And even though I'm outside the range of my Wi-Fi, I can still listen to whatever music I want. And you're right. I got a couple of albums for Christmas, for my birthday. I did get a couple albums for Christmas, but I'm not talking about those now.
Your birthday was what, last week?
Yes, the 10th.
10th. Steve is tomorrow.
Yep, and you're Monday.
And I'm Monday.
Exactly right. And Soundbites is just had their birthday on Labor Day. So all four of us, we're all New Year's babies.
But I'm really feeling old.
Yeah, you should be. You're old.
Well, my granddaughter
on
Tuesday turned 21.
Wow. Your granddaughter turned 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm taking her out Wednesday.
He's old.
I'm taking her out Wednesday and buying her a drink.
Good for you.
Dinner and drink.
Good for you.
She want...
It'll be her first drink.
Not.
My daughter's first drink was like at 3. My daughter at home, if she wants, you know, we give her a little glass of wine when the family all sits down to dinner. She gets the pony glasses, the little tiny, the little aperitif glasses. We used to give her, you know, it takes like 3 drops of wine. She felt like such a big girl. Having her little 3 drops of wine.
Well, I wouldn't let her. You know, it was just a month ago. She was at my house, my granddaughter working for me. And I had some raspberry Smirnoffs in the bottles in there. Grandpa, can I have one of those? No, you're not 21 yet.
Right, right.
When you're 21, then you can ask me and go in there. Right. I'm sorry. You know, I wasn't her parent.
Well, see, and that's exactly right. Now, I'm Italian, so wine to me is not an alcoholic drink. It's like just what you drink. And so when my daughter would say, can I have a little glass of wine? We'd give her a little glass of wine. But if she said, can I have a whiskey? Oh, hell no. You're not 21. You can't drink that.
And you,
it really is very different. I mean, like I said, I'm Italian. I grew up. We made wine in the basement. It's not something that we thought of as an alcoholic beverage.
And the thing that it was, and I guess it's me being a grandparent. Her parents weren't there.
Yeah.
She wasn't 21.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the authority to sit there. Granted, she wasn't leaving anywhere. She wasn't going driving in and everything else because she was working with me for the week. And she was staying at my house. But still, no. I didn't have the permission to, you know, say, go ahead, the right to go ahead and say, do that.
Right.
So I wouldn't.
Absolutely.
Once she's over, you know, 21, I'm going to be 21 pretty soon. I go, when you are, then you can go to the refrigerator.
No need to rush.
Yep. You got plenty of time.
Dory in the Twitter says, send me Rumball so I can survive the first week of October, please. He's coming out here. Sob.
We had an idea. Was it at the live event last week?
Yeah.
You need to make a rum cake.
Oh, wait a minute. News break. Now, talk about the great, you know, we were talking about Second Life, you know, and... I got a great story that when we come back from the news, I want to share with you folks because this is going to be unbelievable.
All right. We have we are going to take a quick break. Now, I don't think it's for news as much as it is for our great underwriters to talk a little bit about why they love this station as much as you should. and as much as you do. So we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Yep, yep. And Dave has a story.
Yeah. Well, no, great news.
Oh, news.
Yes.
That's right.
Then I'll go to my story. But first, you know, we're talking about how that we're into Second Life and we're meeting people all over the world. I don't know why this didn't trigger it before. Well, I happened to be talking to this one person, and somebody else came by and asked about the rum balls.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, you know, blah, 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 and I do this and that. And I says, but, you know, I really miss having my Antigua rum.
Mm-hmm.
And this individual comes over to me in separate IM chat and goes, Dave, are you serious? Do you use Antigua rum? I go, yes, I love to have some. A friend of mine sent it up here. It was 150 proof. It was fantastic. They go, how many bottles would you like?
There you go.
Because I had been working with them on this one program teaching them. You sure? They go, how many bottles would you like? I've got two.
Nice. That's
two bottles of Antigua 150 proof rum coming by.
It's going to be a good Christmas.
By Christmas time. And they said, no problem. I gave them all my information. So I can hold the rum balls. Are good. Because those, you thought my other ones were good?
No, it's the Antigua rum that really,
we will have to have extinguishers around the studio.
It really makes you not care what the second one tastes like, frankly.
if you could remember, remember it. Right.
They're very tasty, but even so, you can't really remember.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. And then, again, I'll go into a small mini story.
Sure.
Frustration. And I know Steve and I, because Steve and I were talking about this before, and it's not kind of a rant, but it is sort of. You know, right now we've been super busy, and we've been telling folks, it's going to take, we're doing a guesstimate. I mean, you come in, and you see all these computers waiting there, and you're taking a line, a number in line, and we're trying to give a guesstimate on how long it's going to take to fix it. And we're telling them so many days. Okay. So we go ahead and give this young lady a guesstimate on how long it's going to take. And we went ahead, and it was one day over what we were promised. So Dan, though, turns around and calls her, and says, here's what's going on, blah, 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 blah. We call her after it's ready. She waits 3 days after it was done to finally show up.
Sure.
And she shows up with her boyfriend.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, the Yahoo there, the young boyfriend, I think he's just trying to impress her. Well, you should give her a discount. I go, excuse me, why? Well, you didn't get it done when you said you would. I says, it's an estimate. Well, if I go to a restaurant and I sit there that long, they usually sit there and give me some type of discount for my inconvenience. I said, well, wait a minute. I'm not a restaurant. I'm a service. Do you go in and argue with your mechanic that he says it's going to take this long, and if it takes a little bit longer? Again, we can only guesstimate how long it's going to take. I have no, my crystal ball is still out to the repair shop.
Yeah.
As far as telling you,
how long did they say it would take to fix?
Yeah. Even once we get it on the bench, there's no guarantee. Oh, this is only going to take an hour. We don't know until we get into it.
Right.
Dan did. And then she waits 3 days after to do something.
Yeah,
and
those are the annoying ones. They call every day. Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? And when it's finally done, they take a week to pick it up.
Right. But this, I was just about to say that. My favorite are the passive-aggressive people who just show up or call. Is it done yet? Oh, okay. Or they show up. I was in the neighborhood. No, you weren't.
Yeah.
But they should, because it's passive aggressive. They think if they're there in front of you, you'll work harder. The reality is, if they're there in front of you, you're not working because you're talking to them.
Well, yeah, he was just, this kid was just such a pork chop and trying, sitting there saying, after, oh, we were rude and everything else. And it's like, No, we weren't. You were being obnoxious, you little twit.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, hello? You come in there demanding a discount? Based on what? We fixed your machine.
This is where you and I are different. People used to do that all the time. They'd show up and they'd just stand there and I would be talking to them and, you know, is my machine ready? No, it's not. I said, well, when do you think it'll be ready? Well, you know what? I would be working on it right now, but I'm having so much fun talking to you that I'm not working on it.
Well,
why not? Because I'm talking to you.
Oh, here's one of his arguments.
If you weren't here, I would have been working on it.
I had to stop and answer the phone. You know?
Yeah, or here's one of his arguments. Well, then you should be calling your all your people here and letting them know the progress on the machine.
Now, that's one thing
I go, wait a minute. I'm going to sit there daily, call every person and say, oh, you're not on the bench yet? You're not on the bench? No, we tell them we'll call you when the machine is ready. We tell you how many, guesstimate how many days is going to be. I'm not sitting there calling every person, giving them a progress report.
That would annoy me. It's not done yet. It's not done yet. It's not done yet.
Yeah, right. I would be very annoyed.
Does
by
your
that.
Mechanic call you throughout the day telling you, well, I put this spark plug in. I'm going for number two. I'll call you when it's in.
Right.
I got one tire rotated.
People are very reasonable about auto repairs in general. People are very reasonable about auto repairs and unreasonable about computer repairs.
There's something very personal
is.
About your computer. We shouldn't have called it the personal computer.
That's right.
I can't live without it. It's broken. You already are living without
it. Yeah,
that's right. Then you should be dead.
Yeah.
You should. You should. I apologize that you're no longer among the living, and I don't really need to converse with you because I'm not a psychic.
I run my whole business
a
on
medium.
It. Well, then you should have a second computer.
Yeah, right. If it's actually for your business, you should probably have a second machine.
Yeah, but again, what really ticked me off is he goes ahead, you know, is doing all this flaming, and the girl is just sitting there, you know, and she was trying.
She probably gets this all the time.
From the boyfriend?
From the boyfriend, yeah. And it's just, you know, shakes her head and walks away.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know.
And then there's the ones that don't read your service forms.
It
got so bad that we had to make people fill out their own form. Because we used to have people describe the problem to us, and then we'd write it down.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then when they picked up the computer, well, I didn't say that. Well, that's what was written. So now we have them type in the form. And so we know exactly what they want done.
And then
and sometimes that still doesn't work.
And I don't know if you get it on the Mac side, though, is I'll still get them sit there and say, well, did you check all the programs?
Yeah.
No, you didn't put. I put down. I checked what you said was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I go ahead and sit there and spend? Well, how do I know everything else works? You try it out. I mean, if you want to pay me,
right.
Well, that should be part of your service. I go. Then I got to charge you for it.
Right.
It takes time. Right. We charge
by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
We had one. We get these a lot. A couple of weeks ago, a computer came in, and the symptom was it don't work.
Good symptom.
Three words.
Yeah.
Okay, so we fix it. It turned out to be a bad hard drive. So then last week it comes back in, and the symptom is same thing.
Yeah.
So technically, the same thing was it don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Technically,
that's true.
That's technically true.
Yes.
This time it's the video card. Completely different symptom.
Well, now, excuse me, but now I got to put it on the person at the front counter.
Yeah.
Whoever that person was, when they saw it don't work, needs to get a little more detail.
Well, half the time it's someone dropping it off for the company or for, you know, if it's a personal computer, they'll drop it off for the husband or wife and they don't know.
Right.
So then we have to call the person and, you know, what's really the problem? It don't work.
Right.
You know, I had another one that has a laptop in, came in, picked that up, paid with it. For a check, dropped off another one, and check bounced. Turns out this other computer he drops off belongs to a friend.
Ah.
And says, well, I need that one back. I go, no. Well, it's not my computer.
Don't care.
You signed it in. It's technically yours as far as I see on this this form. So when you want to pay me for the other one, well, I don't know when I can. That's when you'll get the other laptop back. But, you know, I'll see what we can do. You know, I might have to call the police. Go right ahead.
Exactly.
And then I'll show them the bounce check.
Yep. And next time you come in, bring cash.
Oh, definitely.
We actually had that. And then every little problem we have in the office all goes back to this one court case that a woman sat in our office for 9 hours because she lived so far away, she didn't want to drive home. She lived in Greece, actually a few blocks from me. and we worked on her computer for the whole 9 hours, running tests, replacing parts, finding out what was wrong. I felt bad and only charged her 4 hours.
Right.
And she sues us because she only expected to pay 1 hour.
How can you expect to pay 1 hour?
Because she says she wasn't told that our rate was per hour. She thought it was a flat rate. Giant signs all over the office say per hour. The paperwork she signed when she brought the computer in said per hour.
Yeah.
So she sued us, and we won in small claims court.
Right.
She appealed. We went to city court, and she won. The judge said since she didn't understand the contract, there was no contract, therefore she doesn't have to pay us.
Wow.
So I wanted to say the judge so I can go buy a car, sign a contract, and then keep the car, get my money back, claiming I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently.
I want to go to that judge when I'm on that side of the table.
Yeah.
See, this is very different from when I used to sell computers. First, we had actual margins back in my day. Which you don't.
Mm-mm.
But in all the years that I worked at the computer center, we did not take credit cards. We took only cash or checks. And we never had one bounce check. We never had one person.
People were more responsible back then.
Apparently
too.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they were. We had a couple of jerks.
Oh, you always get those.
But in general, we never had anybody who... we definitely never had anybody who bounced a check with us. And we took personal checks for thousands of dollars, and nobody ever bounced one. It was a different day, I guess. We did have a couple of jerks in the store, and I won't tell the stories because some of them are still alive. But, we really did have very good luck, I think. And it is a different world now.
It's become everyone wants as much as they can for as little as possible. There doesn't seem to be any personal responsibility anymore.
Yeah, no lie.
Everyone wants to strike it rich, win
the
lottery,
and everybody
win
assumes
a lawsuit.
That you're dissing them in some way.
Yeah.
That you disrespect them. I'm sorry, I can't fix your computer. It blew up. What's wrong with you? Why do you hate me, personally, individually, me? Your computer, look, it's in small pieces here on this desk.
Smoldering.
It's smoldering. We can't fix that. But yeah, people, it is a different world. It is a different world.
And everybody, you know, instant gratification.
The hard question we always get asked is why did this happen? We don't know. Things break.
Yeah.
Sunspots.
It's electronics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Things break. Then and that's it. And because of market pressure and prices being driven down, things are made with lower quality components these days. So things break more often than they used to.
Yes,
in fact, you know, they don't make them like they used to is literally true.
Yep.
They're cheaper components, being rushed to market, lower and lower margins. What was that? Website. There was some website that was selling on really, really low margins. They had 0.5% margin.
Wow.
Dell sells on a 1% margin.
Yep.
And you try to make it up in volumes. You know, if you sell a million computers a day, you can make it up in a 1% margin. But it's a rough industry.
Yeah, we lose money on every sale, but we make it up in volume. Our next caller is Joe from Fairport. Welcome, Joe. What do you know?
Hey, Nick. I have a question for you.
Okay.
A couple months back, you mentioned something about a Roku device.
Yes.
And I was wondering if you ever tried my advice and rented one from them and returned it if you didn't like it. And
I did. I bought it. I love it. I use it all the time. I am a huge fan of Roku.
Oh, cool.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I love it.
Awesome. So now I'll try one.
There you go. The Roku box, for those of you who don't know, is from Roku.com, R-O-K-U. And you buy it, you set it up, and it connects to Netflix and Amazon and a whole bunch of other services, some of which are free, some of which you pay for. So if you're a Netflix customer, as am I, I can put something on my instant watch queue and then watch it on my television. Because everything in the Instant Watch queue goes right through the Roku box. and I can buy movies and television shows, you know, for whatever it is, $3, $4 a pop from Amazon as well. And there's a bunch of free channels. There's a bunch of pay channels. I still haven't paid the $2 a month for the Kung Fu Theater. but I'm closer to it. It's only a couple of bucks a month, for Pete's sake. Why am I hesitating?
Right. Okay. It's very similar.
Very frugal.
Yep. It's very similar to the new Apple TV that Apple announced a couple of weeks ago. In fact, Roku dropped their price. It used to be $99 for the standard definition box, and there were all these rumors that Apple's new Apple TV was going to be $99. So Roku dropped their price to $59 for the standard definition, still $99 for the high definition. And that's what Apple's box is, too. It's $99 for the high-definition box. And that connects to Netflix, YouTube, and iTunes. So a lot depends on where you get your content. If you buy a lot of stuff on iTunes and or are a Netflix subscriber, then the Apple TV box. And it's poised to their big selling point is being able to instantly watch and stream network television shows. Because that's always been the big thing about getting broadcast shows to your computer. So now you can do that with the Apple box. The Roku box has more channels available to it, but that's something that's possible on the Apple box, and we're expecting more channels to come along shortly. So if you get a lot of your content from iTunes, the Apple box is great. And a little tiny thing fits in the palm of your hand, about the same size as the Roku box. And then the Roku box has been around longer, so it has more channels available to it. Right. But it's a really neat way to stream internet computer content to your television. And we're actually seeing more and more newer TVs these days having either Wi-Fi built into the television or an Ethernet jack right on the television.
Right.
And having internet built into the TV.
The other day I was watching the Flickr channel and the Facebook channel. Streaming people's pictures and stuff like that. Yeah, it's a pretty cool box. I'm pretty impressed. Again, Joe, thank you for suggesting that I give it a try anyway, and I'm very, very pleased with it. All right, we are going to take another break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. For Dave Enright, for Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Back in just a couple of minutes right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is station manager Rob Linton. Do you have a comment or suggestion for Jazz 90.1? Call our feedback phone today at 966-2407. That's 966-2407. Be heard at Jazz 90.1. Jazz 90.1 is supported in part by our members and by Frontier Communications. Frontier Communications offers high-speed internet with the reliability and support you've come to expect from Frontier. For more information, you can visit www.frontiernet.net.
Hi, this is Otto Bruno inviting you to join me every Sunday afternoon at 3:30 for my new show, Sinatra and Company.
I have got you under my skin.
I'll feature the music of Frank Sinatra as well as those with whom Frank worked and played. Artists like Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Count Basie, Rosemary Clooney, and many more. So join in the fun with Sinatra and Company every Sunday afternoon at 3:30 right here on Jazz 90.1.
I would sacrifice anything.
I was facing foreclosure, and they guaranteed they would get my loan modified.
I paid them a fee and never heard from them again.
Anyone can be a victim of a loan modification scam, but you don't have to be. Know the signs. Get the facts. Visit www.loanscamalert.org. For trusted government-approved help and to report a scam, call 1-888-995-HOPE. That's 1-888-995-4673.
Here's another I Love New York travel tip.
One of the best ways to view New York's spectacular autumn is aboard one of the state's scenic railways. Aboard the Adirondack Scenic Railroad in Old Forge, witness autumn's amazing display of colors amidst some of the most pristine mountain terrain in remote areas of the Adirondacks. Riding along the scenic Esopus Creek in one of the Catskill Mountain Railroad's vintage coaches, you'll enjoy views of the Catskill's natural autumn beauty that you just can't get from your car. For more information on these and other scenic train rides in New York State, dial 1-800-CALL-NYS or visit the I Love New York website at iloveny.com. All aboard for autumn fun. Another reason I love New York.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I like this one.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, Dave wouldn't even let me talk until he'd listened to some of the music. Linda Wildman is here in the studio. She's just sitting watching us rock back and forth. She, of course, can't hear by the once he puts the thing in. So she's just seeing it's the same thing you see on airplanes, people being stupid with their headphones on, just going do-do-do-do-do, singing off key and stuff. Yeah, that was us just now, and Linda's very amused.
Well, the folks on the camera.
And the folks in the camera seeing the same thing. Exactly right. Exactly right. Welcome back. We are Sound Bites. It is 43 minutes after the hour, and we were just, before we get to the next phone call, we were just looking at the features of Apple TV and the stuff that's available under the Roku box. I listen to Pandora a lot. I listen to Radio Time, Radio Paradise, and MP3 Tunes I listen to a lot. Well, I don't listen to MP3 Tunes that much. I did just some of the free stuff. So that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Actually, I just had a question on the Apple TV. I don't know if Steve mentioned the rental of the TV shows.
Yeah, 99 cents for standard def or high def TV show rental, theoretically the day after it's broadcast.
Right.
From several different networks. They don't have all the networks online yet. But the other networks you can purchase through the iTunes store as well on your computer and then stream them to the Apple TV.
Right.
So it's, it's NBC Universal's the holdout again. They don't think 99 cents gives them enough margin.
You're right.
Yeah, they want a 90% margin.
Well, I like the rental aspect because you're not going to watch the TV show twice usually.
Well, there's two kinds of people, the people that rent their stuff and the people that buy their stuff. And, yep. And my wife buys a lot of TV shows. And
keeps them to see
keeps
again.
Keeps them and never watches them again. But,
she buys them anyway.
That's what I mean.
She buys them anyway.
Well,
yeah.
What's interesting to me is, it's, you know, I was just reading an article in Wired magazine about I think it was in Wired about this. A guy did an experiment and cut himself off from the cable. He cut the cable and just did all the other stuff, and he really missed a couple of shows on NBC, and he missed a couple of other things. But he liked the freedom of renting what he wanted when he wanted it. And what was interesting to me was the fact that he decided there are some shows that really aren't worth a buck an episode.
Yep.
That he would have watched for free, but when he had to pay for them, he didn't anymore.
Right.
And that may bode ill for the television stations continuing to do stuff right. Like this, frankly.
At an average of about 25 episodes per season, the $25 if you watch it one at a time, or the DVDs, get sold at the end of the season, are usually $40-$50 for the series, the season pack. Although it's interesting to see how some of them are priced. Sometimes it's $50 a season, sometimes it's $20 for the entire run of the series.
Yep.
We're big Star Trek fans, and we've been watching the prices drop on the Next Generation. When the DVDs first came out, it was like $150 per season, and there were seven seasons.
Yep.
Now you can get all seven seasons for only $300.
That's really
that's
a heck of a savings.
Deal, yeah.
It's the price original price of two seasons out of the seven.
Yep.
My sister-in-law, God bless her, for my birthday, she sent me the entire boxed set of Thunderbirds.
Yep. See, that's what you watch.
Thunderbirds are go.
You'll watch the commentaries and the special features.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's two full DVDs of nothing but commentaries and stuff. So I'm having a great time with those. And I actually haven't watched the series again yet, but I've been watching all the special stuff instead. And in fact, I just bought
for a 40-year-old TV series.
For a 40-year-old TV series, I just finished watching. I got on my Roku box through Netflix. I got Hogfather and The Color of Magic, which are two Terry Pratchett books in the Discworld series, and the British BBC made television miniseries out of them. And so they released them, and I watched them. And then I thought to myself, well, crap, now I have to buy the DVDs because I don't find any extras on the Roku box.
Hogfather is the 20th novel in the series.
Yeah, and the TV, and the I'll tell you what, yep. I really, when I watched Hogfather, I loved the book. I honestly expected the movie to be okay. You know, okay. But it was great. It was exceptional. I really, really, really liked it. And Color of Magic stars Sean Astin, so that was kind of fun.
There was another one. We were asking somebody, or they were asking us last week.
Did we finish with Sal? Is he still hanging on the line?
I'm just listening to you guys.
Sorry, Sal.
All right, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Well, we can keep him on there if he wants to continue to listen.
He can continue to contribute. Well, I don't care.
I'm just listening.
I suddenly realized he was still there.
All right, thanks, Sal. Well, one of the other things, again, one of our folks in Second Life were wondering about watching other TV programs as they did away with cable.
Right.
And I happened to look into, and I don't know if you guys can pull it up, I believe it's called TV Netto. That's TVNETO.com. And it's a service, supposedly, that you can pay a flat rate of, I think it's $49.95, one-shot time deal. And through the satellite, you can watch other programs. It's like 4,700 programs that you can watch.
Yeah, there's another one called IVI.TV.
And supposedly watch them on your computer if you don't want to pay the cable.
Everyone is waiting for them to get shut down by the networks suing them for rebroadcasting a network television.
Until then, however.
Until then, yeah. In fact, IVI TV is $5 a month, but they have a 30-day free trial. Mac, Windows, and Linux.
What was it, IVI?
IVI.TV. And then yours was TVNETO.com. Yep. And it's different ways to watch television from other cities too. That's one of the big things that IVI talks about. Is you want to watch
especially when the football games are blacked out in your area.
Well, that becomes a second issue because then it's not just the networks involved; it's the sports leagues involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can't watch the Bills game in the Rochester because it's blacked out. And, maybe you can watch it out of the San Diego station.
Yep.
And then the time delays. You're not home at 7 o'clock to watch something, so you wait for the West Coast feed and watch it again.
IVI.TV appears to be a downloadable thing that you
it's an app.
Program.
Yeah.
And it's available for Mac, for Windows, and believe it or not, for Linux. I'm very impressed, actually.
Well, it's
it looks like TV Neato is Windows only because the download is an .exe file that doesn't even ask you what OS you want. It's just an .exe file.
Yeah. Right. And it seems to be denied, internet access denied here.
Well, that's the proxy server here at school.
Right. But that looks also pretty cool, but you're right.
There's also, it's a channel 131, was it? Yeah, channel131.com, ch131.com. Ooh, that's blocked by the proxy filter here, too. That's another one where people have uploaded TV shows and movies. Now, that one is really a gray area of being illegal or not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, if I can videotape a show and watch it later, if I don't bother videotaping it and just download someone else that videotaped it, that's a little gray too.
You know, one thing I found though, it's been really funny, is I'll sit there and, like, on Sundays watch NASCAR, and I got a friend, like, say, out on the West Coast. So I'm watching it because it's set up for my time. And I can sit there and say, quick dial, oh, watch it. There's a crash coming up, because I can hear on their TV a few seconds.
They're behind.
They're a good 10 or 15 seconds behind. So they quick, oh, okay. But that is so wild. I didn't think there was that much of a delay just because they're out on the West Coast.
Well, sometimes it's the delivery mechanism. In my house, I see a delay between our analog TVs and our digital cable boxes.
Yeah, the cable box is always...
Yeah, the digital is a few seconds behind analog.
Yeah.
So when,
the digital, I mean.
Yeah, when Matthew's in the other room and we happen to be watching the same show, it's you can hear it coming out of the other room a few seconds before you see it.
Yeah, right. But this IVI TV seems to have a bunch of shows from CBS and Fox and ABC and the CW, and I'm really kind of shocked that they haven't been shut down yet.
Well, we're hoping they're going to... get enough licensing agreements with the content providers. Right now they're calling themselves an aggregator, like a cable company. So right now, your cable company has to buy every network on the system. And in fact, here in Rochester, Time Warner just went through their, what was the marketing slogan, rollover or play tough.
Yeah,
the Disney networks.
But wait a minute. Let me go back to rollover or play tough. Yeah. Wasn't the whole point of that they weren't going to roll over and pay more so you wouldn't have to pay more? And now we have a rate hike.
Yep.
Okay. It's like I just didn't want to miss anything.
The third rate hike in a year here in Rochester.
Yeah.
And the DVRs are going up, and the DVR remotes are going up. It's like every little thing is being raised up. But yeah, so the Disney networks, including Disney Channel and ABC and ABC Family, wanted to raise the rates that cable companies pay, and Time Warner, you know, said they were going to roll over and raise the rates, or we're going to play tough and cancel those networks on your cable. They decided to do both. so they kept the signal, and they're going to raise the rates too. This IVI TV, they're calling themselves an aggregator, so you can watch all these different shows on your computer. But we'll have to see what happens when the content owners want to come along and get their piece
again,
of it.
But again, you know, I think it's going to be, where are these places like this IVI TV and TV Netto, where are they located? You know, it's just like we said before.
Right.
Right.
You know, I mean, because government will say, you know, our great legislators are always saying, well, we got to put bans on the internet, the web. Wait a minute. It's called the World Wide Web. How the heck are you going to control other countries?
Well, that was the big thing in the UK. UK's got their iPlayer, so you can watch BBC on the internet, on your computer with the iPlayer. And it's a little different in the UK because the TV station, you know, BBC is owned by the government and you pay licensing fees. So it is not available outside of the UK unless you know how to sneak around and spoof your IP address. But other than that, a lot of times shows in other countries aren't available in different countries than where they're produced, and you have to wait for them to come along. That's why I got addicted to BBC America on the digital cable.
Oh, boy, ain't that the truth.
We're going through the Being Human finale. They're making an American version of Being Human. They're making an American version of Torchwood, but at least Russell T. Davies is working on it. So all of these British shows, in fact, most people don't realize, a lot of American TV shows started out as small British productions.
Is John Bannerman going to be in Torchwood?
That's the rumor. He's going to be in the American
version.
Wouldn't
that be great?
Yeah.
All right, that's it. You've clearly wasted another 2 hours of your life. Listening to us on the radio instead of doing anything actually productive. And we want to thank you for that. We're delighted that you've wasted 2 hours with us. We want to thank everybody who called in. We want to apologize to everyone. Well, there wasn't anybody hanging on the line this time, so we don't have to worry about that. But thank you all so much for listening in. We will be back here next week. Thank you. We're gone. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. It's 55 minutes after the hour for Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.